Ma all'inizio parlo un po' meno.
Benvenuti al podcast di Antonino Saggio.
In italiano, perché così ci sistemiamo. Allora, beh, io non mi capita spesso di essere emozionato in pubblico, però obiettivamente è una circostanza molto particolare. E poi questa bellissima onore e questa bellissima sorpresa veramente mi fa molto felice. Grazie. E anche del fatto che per la prima volta lo tocco, e quindi passiamo anche questa sensazione a questo nuovo nato. Allora, dunque, io ho 40 minuti circa, questo è quello che abbiamo coordinato. I have around 40 minutes, I will do it in English. The idea is to talk just a little bit about the book and the translation, but to make a lecture about Errani, because I think I discussed about this with my friend Antonino Di Raimo particularly, and we thought it was a good idea for many reasons, as every move has a lot of things, you know. So the reason to do it on Errani, it is very strategically, as you will see, you will understand. Okay, now let's start. So everybody that knows me knows that the menu is rich. He knows that everything is in my website, as usual. You know how to go in my website, and you are expecting very anxiously, I'm sure, where is the hidden link this time. And since we have a lot of things, so I decided to put the hidden link over here under Giuseppe Errani, and here we go in the lecture. So you go in the web, you do the same thing. This is, I think, my seventh or eighth lecture at Polis plus all Polis CCD Lab, so people pretty much knows what it is. Well, Architecture and Modernity, this book, it is a book that has been written wonderfully in the introduction by Professor Damo and friend. Wants to do a lot of things at the same time, actually. And the translation in Albanian makes even more. We understood how, I understood certain things that were not clear to me before reading the preface. That was really the idea that you work on a country, you create a level of a culture in the country mainly through the language. The language is the number one tool, and always been like that. Italy is founded when Dante wrote Divina Commedia. Before that was not even the concept. So language and culture are really very strongly interconnected one to the other. That's why the translation of this book, one of the few architectural books in Albanian, is so crucial. Because it is not only the content per se, that I hope there is of a large interest, but it's also this major effort to root this into the Albanian culture, in the Albanian language, because if you don't have the language, you don't have the tool, the main tool, to elaborate your own culture. So I think this was an immense contribution that Polis did, Polis as a team did, and of course Professor Damo and the whole equipe that helped him, that I really want to thank you personally, because was a big effort. So I want to really to thank Ermal Oka, Dorin Papa, Ardit Lille, Legian Bagasi. Please make an applause for them. And naturally, this cannot be done without. So, the idea of one of the main ideas of the book is really this idea that we look at the past, and this is an idea that comes from Walter Benjamin, actually. It's the idea that the past, we look at the past finding fragments that are meaningful. And the past is not a continuation of things. We exert it on the past. We look at the past, understanding fragments, structure that can be of importance in order to interpret certain aspects of our evolution and our future. That's why the whole book is built around few very strong ideas. The first one is that there is a change of paradigm between the industrial paradigm and the whole idea of architecture related to the industrial paradigm and the information technology paradigm. This is one very, very important concept. And the second very important concept is that architecture tries to deal with the crisis that is around them and with the change of politics, economics, vision of the world. And in this way, architecture is a great effort to interpret and at the same time direct the world in certain directions. So these two ideas that are being perfectively summarized by Professor Damo in the introduction are really the bones of the book. So in order to not to talk in abstract, I decided to use as an example, let's say, of this. We could do this approach in many architects that has been devoted in the book. I will give the master class on Lucan, talking about the 50s, about his ideas and syntax. We will have more or less 20 hours frontal speech about that. So be prepared for whoever will join that. But now we will talk shortly about Giuseppe Terragni. Why Giuseppe Terragni and why Giuseppe Terragni in Albania? Of course, the influence of... I wanted that this book accompany me during the discussion because it's my other important son. And why Giuseppe Terragni in Albania? Because Giuseppe Terragni was by far the most important architect of the first part of the century. The most gifted, the one that created more innovation, and that one that made architecture that has been by far more discussed throughout the world. So there is no absolute doubt about the stature of this figure. But the other reason, of course, is the strong relationship between Albania and Italy. And there is also the big influence of certain ideas of the architectural debate in Italy and some acquisition and construction in Albania. And we know that these ideas continue to create an interest in the cultural debate. But at the same time, Giuseppe Terragni was, although the most gifted, although the most creative, and although the person that really created the masterpiece, was not considered supported by Italy as a system, supported by Italy as a regime. He's always, in some way, a person that, as many poets, are not at the center of the power. So Terragni did not build anything outside Italy, and by chance he did actually make things in Italy. So in a way, I wish Terragni will arrive in Albania now, after 6 years of his death. I really wish that he arrives here, because he deserves. Okay, I call this lecture Terragni Comasco, Italian European Architect. Comasco. Why Comasco? Comasco means from Como, from the north of Italy. And from the north of Italy it comes a whole generation of extremely creative architects that made an impressive contribution to Italian culture and to Italian art. I just wanted to put Terragni in a triade, in a triad of great, great people coming from the north. One is Borromini, and the person that started to look at architecture completely differently than as it was intended before. The second is Caravaggio, another incredible revolutionary thinker and painter and visionist. Everything for both of these men, for the first time, starts from the bottom. He creates this completely revolution of thinking that everything starts to be related from man, everything starts to relate from the bottom, either in architecture or in painting. And the third one is Terragni, coming again from that part of Italy, close to Switzerland, up there, close to the Ticino. All three of them are coming from the same area. Terragni, in the other way, is for many aspects the quintessential Italian, for many reasons. First of all, to me is also very important these names. The names are so important. This man that has inscribed in his destiny the name of Enea, that is the great Trojan eroe, but it was a defeated eroe, but that we start a new genia. In a way, I was always thinking of Terragni in this way. Terragni died extremely young, basically at the age of 35. He already completely his activity as an architect. Terragni has also this name that is very important, Terragni. Terragni comes from land. He's coming from a family of builders. The father was a carpenter that then became a little developer, and he always had a very intense relationship with the building as an act, and the material as an act. And his own body is really very much, in a way, incorporated that aspect, to be a builder. And they always had this tradition of the Comasco as the best builder in Italy, the famous Maestri Comascini. So there is a whole spiral of things that are around this. And the third, Terragni is also an Italian, and in a way share a lot of drama of Europe, because of course he made the war. He was a soldier. He was a captain in the Italian army. He was sent to Russia, and he basically came back from Russia with a very 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 strong and very very dangerous depression. He was cured, between many quotes, with electroshock, and then finally, the electroshock is a little bit dangerous thing, particularly at the beginning, and he was one of the many people that basically died out of this pretty intense cure. So he died at the age of 39, few days before the fall of the regime. So This is Italian also in that aspect, in sharing a big drama. And the other aspect is that we never understand the effort of this generation of Italians if we don't look at their effort to belong to a European tradition. For Terragni, for the other rationalists, the relationship with outside of Italy was the central ingredient. Was an absolutely fundamental ingredient, not only because they participated to SIAM, they were the first group that really created this liaison, but it was not an autarchic, autochthone culture, but it was a culture that was open to Europe, and particularly the artists, the poets, even during the fascism, tried as much as possible to create this this liaison. So these are the reasons why I call this lecture Italian Giuseppe Terragni, Italian European Comasco, Italian European architect. And this is one of the pictures of the last very 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 last period, and I think you see in him so many things in this eyes. Here I put just for the sake of the few followers, I put a lot of links of the works that we've done on Ferragni in so many years, that is not only the book, but so many other things. We did exhibit, Loris, you were part of the team many years ago. We even forget about so many things we did. Okay, so this is something that we did. At that time, also Antonino was part of this adventure, and we did a lot of things, really a lot of things on Ferragni, and also other books on Ferragni, particularly dealing with the moment of reconstruction of architecture. That was something very important in the 90s that we did in the book series, and movies. And then I wanted to remember that we did an exhibit here at Polis, and you were instrumental in putting together this exhibition in 2012. So, and workshop, and we did a lot of things. Okay, so now we move to another thing. I wanted to put, so now we'll do two things. Okay. Sorry. Just one thing I have to find out, the technology. Okay, here it is. We are going to do two things. I created a slide presentation, and then we'll talk on it about just Ferragni in the context of the 30s, and in the context in which you will find in the book. Okay, so you will understand that. And then we have an overview of Ferragni architecture. So we will not go too much into syntax or grammar or language issue. We just do it softly. We will present you Ferragni as an architect. Okay? So we will start with this show. I think Okay, just one second, sorry. Okay. What is this slideshow? Basically, Ferragni, it is put it in the book in the 30s. You have to decide in which moment the architect become crucial when you do such a book. In Ferragni, it is easy. In Frank Lloyd Wright, it's difficult. Frank Lloyd Wright operated for 70 years. So when you put in scene Frank Lloyd Wright, it's a very important decision. In Ferragni, it's easy. It's an architect that operated in the 30s. So in this part of the book that is divided in three or four chapters, in the first part, there is always something that is the most difficult for me to do, and probably also the most difficult for you to translate, I don't know. There are three or four pages in which I create the scenario, the political, cultural, and artistic scenario in which that part of the book develops. Each has that structure, are very, very difficult five pages to write, because it must be very dense and at the same time comprehensible. And the scenario, what is the scenario of the 30s? The scenario of the 30s is completely different than the scenario of the 20s. Because in the 20s there was this very important energy of making the revolution. In the idea of the machine and the idea of industrial strength of the world through the avant-garde and through the new architects, and particularly through Gropius and Le Corbusier, was in a couple of years, in two or three years, finally succeed, and was clear that was possible to have a new paradigm of architecture based on industrial on the industrial world, in the industrial Weltanschauung, and that touched everything, from music to art to theater to architecture to design, and was clear that happened. In the 30s, the situation started to be different. That thing was done. The revolution was done. What's going on now? How the new architects that we start to think ahead will move, and what they will think. So in those parts, I will describe that basically what is happening in the 30s in the more advanced architect is an interpretation of this revolution in personal terms. And what are these personal terms is their history, their particular, their personal history, the history of their culture, the history of their place that is different from one to the other. So it's a kind of declination of a revolution within their own, of their own context. So if you don't understand this aspect, you don't understand what is the battle that goes on in the 30s and why Terragni is so important. Because Terragni is exactly part of this process. The process is how I can use the revolution of the new architecture within the Italian situation, within Tubia Comasco, within the fact to be an Italian, within the fact to be a European architect. Now, in order to explain that, this part of the book, that is the second part of the book, use three people, three key people that follow this process differently but with the same type of crisis, the same type of tensions. These three people are, one, Alvar Aalto. Alvar Aalto arrives to the new CIAM behaving completely as a different person. He is definitely a Finnish, he's a person that brings another culture, he brings food, he brings the forest, he brings the lakes, he brings a landscape, and all these things should be incorporated together with the new language. So Alvar Aalto is the great hero of this this effort in bringing within a specific context the value of the new architecture. Aalto, by the way, means lake. So Terragni means land, but Aalto means lake. And what is happening in Italy? Italy is a very interesting country in the 30s. The first modern station in the world is Italian, something that now with this book probably people start to realize. But, you know, the first modern station happened in Italy, the new type of typology of the station as an urban event, not only as a language. The first time that the system of the railing and the system of the spaces are integrated, and it's not a palace in front of something like un tappo, is a very interesting country, also because Mussolini, you know, the fascist was not clear what he wanted to be. Basically, for years, was not clear. I wanted to be a revolutionary, I am up socialist, I am up there, I am up there. That was not clear, and the people was not clear neither. Just imagine that the most loved person by Mussolini for many years, Margherita Sarfatti, is a Jew. Just this fact will tell you how much contradiction it was for many years of the fascism. So at the beginning, around 30 to 35, the situation was very fluid and it was very interesting and open. And within this moment, the architecture of Terragni arrives at this high level. We are going to see these things more specifically, but clearly Terragni is a key figure in that moment. He is not a Finnish, so it's not natural that is the most important thing as in Aalto. For an Italian, is history, stratification, layers, mass, constructions. How all these things will relate with a transparent, abstract, asymmetrical, and dynamic language. And that's why Terragni is such a genius, because he was able to put these two things together. Because the genius always finds solution of contradictory elements and find new way to that. The third great person is Frank Lloyd Wright. And again, I put Frank Lloyd Wright in the book here, in this moment, when he was already 70s, basically. It's 40 years that he's operating, but I found this moment, the 30s, a fantastic moment of Frank Lloyd Wright, not only for the level of the production, but for this whole idea how to bring certain, let's say, democratic idea of Europe, certain idea that we have to work for everybody. We have to ameliorate the society as a whole and things like that. How it translates within an Italian, an American individualistic world, because America is very different culturally than Europe. And so the work of Frank Lloyd Wright is absolutely fantastic in this phase, particularly the whole experience in the popular housing that Frank Lloyd Wright did, the Usonian houses, but also the great masterpiece of the 30s. So there is, again, this process of... And the other thing that people don't understand is that how Frank Lloyd Wright was fascinated by modernity as everybody else. You know, he was doing... Not only Le Corbusier was taking pictures in front of the cars. Frank Lloyd Wright was the same. So the idea that Frank Lloyd Wright was a kind of organic countryman is completely false. He is reinterpreting the issues of modernity within the system of the American system, the American culture, really something different. What are doing the big guys? Le Corbusier in the 30s was having that urbanistic idea that was very important even later on. Mies kind of moved down. He decided to have a system, a modular, standardized system. And then we have this other great Italian that is Nervi and things that are starting to move in the field of construction. Then we have another feeling, very, very nice, another group of people that are working in rurality. They want to look at rural architecture as the basis of a real functional architecture must be based on the rule, on the real rule of rural architecture. And there is a group of people that is doing this. Giuseppe Terragni is the number one, because he made, by the way, at the Triennale, that would be a good luck for you there, at the Triennale he made this fantastic exhibition. And then these other groups that are half architects, half artists, half Flaneur and Viseur, that are all around Naples with Rudowski and of course Luigi Cosenza and Roberto Pane and others. And there is this other moment that is very interesting. The world arrived, the world destroyed everything, it is another world that will happen after that. And that is the world in which Cannes will be a central role, and that we'll talk in the master. Okay, I am going in terms of time. How much I have? 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, more or less? Quanto tempo circa? Perché non ho guardato. 15 minutes, I'm fine. So in 15 minutes I will be done. So now we go in the third part. And I want to share you with you Terragni as a person, as an architecture. This is a soft lesson, so there are no major architectural concepts. We just enjoy and we just look, okay? It's not the tough work. So, first of all, the place. The place is Como. I think the most important image to understand a lot of things of life is the tree. The tree is not just the tree. All of us are trees. All of us cannot have meaning if we are not rooted. And if the roots are not belonging to a culture, we are nothing. And at the same time, the leaves are so important. So if we don't capture from the outside, if we don't create a metabolism, we are not what we are. And this, I think, is very important to understand great architects and great intellectuals, whatever. This idea of how does he behave as a tree, how he will change himself. What kind of metabolism of his ideas are related to this dichotomy of something that is rooted down and something that is open to the outside and is able to capture? In Kagami, this is so strong because you cannot imagine for a single second Ferragni without a city, without Como. The two are really important. Ferragni started as a young architect at the Politecnico di Milano. It was an hybrid school, half academia, half Polytechnic as engineer. He has this fashion, this idea of Michelangelo, because Michelangelo was it was not the mainstream. Michelangelo was the opposition, was the revolutionary. The mainstream in Milano was the medievalist approach of Gaetano Moretti, the first the dean. Here again, that idea of Ferragni as a person that participated in the construction. Here are a few beginning of things of Ferragni. This is the house, another very important part of the rooted. The father bought this little palazzetto in the downtown of Como. The mother of Ferragni died basically very, very soon, and so there is a very funny family. It's a family of three men and few assistants that live in this little palazzetto. There is the father, and there is the older brother, the engineer and man of power, Senatore Attilio. Then there is another brother, Ragioniere, a counter. And then Giuseppe, then another brother died very young, Silvio. And so everything happens around this. Ferragni get out of this palazzetto and is in the Como main street, where he play briscola, I have a coffee with other intellectual, typically in the 30s, was working late at night. Everything happens there. And there is also this little office, but it's an operative office because there is the geometer, there is the engineer, so it's a small office, but this works. This is one of the first works, a very interesting monumento ai caduti, that instead of making as normally with a statue of the hero or up there, he creates a kind of an urban scene, and it's rather amazing as an approach in the 70s. And to the young architect, it is given this little remodeling of a facade of hotel that he makes half liberty and half, let's say, manierist, playing with a lot of strange things that is not the moment to talk now. And this is again the monument of Erba, this idea to treat the monument of the death. In each Italian city there is one monument of the death of the first war. And if you happen to go there and read the name, it is impressive, because even in a small town there are 50, 60, 70, 80 deaths. Even in each single town. So evidently was a policy there to make monuments, and this is very unusual. Then he makes tombs, but the first very important project that it is this one, that is for a friend that was the son of an industrialist. He makes this building that is called the workshop for gas production, that in a way is his first approach to really functionalist architecture, that of course started as to be industrial, but the young architect has a specific talent that nobody has. He really has a feeling for architectural composition, and he really has a feeling of a dynamic composition of parts. So what could be very trivial, that you decompose a cycle of production within the different things? In his case, it becomes also a very interesting dynamic composition, something that was not seen so much at that moment, particularly by this young person. These are all reconstructions that are after the war, like the old grandfather with the chariot going west. These are all 3D reconstruction that I did, or my student did, in 86. So the majority of the people in this room was not even born in 86, okay? So we were doing these things, and it's very important why we did these things, because it was our own way to reinterpret what was there. So anyway, this is the Novo Comune, a big scandal happened in Como. The young architects have the opportunity to close an existing lot. On an existing lot, he was able to make this new part, which is this one. And he makes, to have it approved, he made an old, neoclassical facade and sent it to the Comune, but he built a completely modern and extremely strong transatlantic, something that creates a big, big scandal. And they wanted to demolish, and arrived a commission to demolish the building of the young architects. But as everything in Italy, we are not so extreme. So the old professor of him, Portaluppi, that was a very dandy and a nice person, elegant, smart, and was in the commission. The young kid was his student, and then everything was solved. Luckily, because in this way we had the Novo Comune, otherwise, we are soft. These are some views of this incredible building from different points of view. The building is still there, and once in a while we should do a big trip to Como, I think, as Polis, to celebrate this, probably after 6 years again. So the architecture and modernity was a cycle of 6 years, right, Besnik? Yeah, so we have to look something in the future to do that. Okay, then this is the Como Street, and the Como Street, to give you the sensation of where things are. And then he made other small projects, some that are successful and some other not, this Albergo Posta in downtown Como. And then he made this, that is very important, and you don't understand why it is so important, the bathroom, because basically within, this is under the porch of the main street, and there Terragni in these little shops plays a lot with transparency, plays a lot with asymmetry, plays a lot with the modern language. And this, the presence of this shop in the 30s creates a lot of attention on him, and particularly Terragni became like the center of the circle of the pittori astratti, of abstract painter of Como. And so they will start to build exhibition and things together, and start to move a little bit the culture of Italy towards abstractism, while the general thing was a little more monumental and was actually performed mainly by Margherita Sarfatti, that was the queen of this. Okay, so Como, and this is a key drawing. What is that? That is the plan of the military camp, of the Roman military camp in the plain of Como. I often discuss about this issue of imprinting, that is the issue that in some way in the history of the places, the first action the first action that concerns the relationship between the space, the landscape, and how architecture is conceived as a very important precedent. And surely in the whole north of Italy is based, see the light of architecture through the idea of a domination of nature with abstraction and with the strong rule of a military camp. Cardo, Decumano, geometry, these things arise there. That's why the whole north architecture has so much embodied this idea to think of architecture as a kind of artificial act, as a kind of act that creates a dialectic between nature and architecture. And that is completely different in the center of Italy, which has a completely different story, a completely different idea of architecture as its inner beginning. So here we see this Casa del Fascio Terragni. And we have no doubts that even if there are almost the Alps in front of them, just behind them, who wins is this act of artificial foundation. Architecture is an act of artificial foundation. And then here is almost that you see the Cardo de Cumano of the city, like it is embodied in the architecture. So you have no doubt about that imprinting. Terrani really thinks of that, on that idea. And then he creates something that is, I mean, it is amazing. It is amazing because within that he's able to create an abstract, a dynamic, extremely modern architecture. This is the incredible thing of the Casa del Fascio. So on one side he's able to think and to thought about all this tradition in a way of presence of architecture, of solidity, of mass, of rigor, and particularly of domination of architecture on nature, and on the other side is able to be abstract, dynamic, modern as a language. How does it do? It does with a series of systems, and which are clearly shown in these two pages on the books. Basically what he does, he creates a perfect half cube, here it is, and this half cube, in a way, is divided only vertically, never horizontally, always vertically. So this verticality creates vertical bands on the building of different depths. So some are very superficial, some are really deep, but particularly, these are completely abstract. That means that I can take this cube and turn upside down as I want. Doesn't make any difference. You have no clue of what is up or what is down. It's not figurative. It's completely abstract. And second, the band, they are never symmetrical or they are never create any axiality. They always invite you to turn. So it's a kind of a machine of abstraction and of dynamism within the rule of a kind of old imprinting. So this is a miracle. That's why this is one of the most celebrated architecture of the century. You name whatever architect or whatever culture, medium culture, you will ask the Casa del Fascio, it is impossible that he does not know. That otherwise the text means that he's not where you place it. Either or. Because it's a must. It's a must. From America to Japan to everybody must know. Everybody know and must know. Okay, so this is this incredible machine. This is incredible machine that was able to put all these contradictions together. The fascism, the celebration of the fascism that was read through abstraction and not through monumentality. The idea of dynamic instead of axiality, monumentality, etc. And so on and so forth. So this is the Casa del Fascio, and of course we are talking very, very briefly. The Casa del Fascio is also very extremely enjoyable from many points of view, including technology, including construction, including anecdotes. That there are a lot of anecdotes in how this young architect conducted the building site. That is not an easy job. After that, he moved. Milano almost 25 minutes, so he moved. He has another office in Milano with Lingeri, an older friend of him, and he made several buildings in Milano that are apartment buildings. In Milano they are called casa, for that particular tradition, but let's not go to that, because often they are called casa, because they are often the casa is related to the name of the owner, that's why. So Casa Ghiringhelli is because the main owner is in this case, Ghiringhelli. And within that he made an incredible project, again, that is Casa Rustici, is this project here. In this project, Ferrani invents really a new typology, creates a new world, the world that is based on how you can not follow the rule of the lotto, how you cannot do a construction that follows all the streets as is typically done in 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, but instead how you create let's say super functional building. Because the whole idea of the 20s and the 30s, of course, is that idea of the functionalism. Minimize of spaces, perfect construction, no accidents, everything must be in some way extremely rational and extremely optimized. So Italy makes this strange thing. Instead of creating the typical building that surrounds the streets, he makes these two perfect bodies, and that he can show very proudly to whatever congress of modern architecture. But at the same time, he invent this strange, I call it telaio, this strange frame to basically solve the contradiction between these two abstract, perfect body of apartment and the relationship of the street, and the relationship with the city, which is a fundamental issue for an Italian architect, not only when Rossi told so, but even before. And so he makes this, and that is a filtering element, something that will attract the city inside, and something that from the inside you look at the city. A rather unbelievable architecture, again, extremely interesting, extremely important. On top of that, he put a villa, and actually you see in the fifth floor, okay, it's over here. Okay, it's over here. There is a bridge that connects the two wings, and there is an apartment that runs as a villa on the roof on both sides. I was lucky once to find that there was a party there, and I was kind of squeezed in because I had a friend in the building. I remember this as a nice event. So these are the party on the roof of our Milanese top guy. Then he made a lot of things in Rome, a lot of projects in Rome, and I think I have to go a little bit faster, but just I wanted to concentrate a bit on the Asilo Santeria, that is the masterpiece. Each one of these buildings has a story. This actually is the building for the son of Margherita Sarfatti that died in the war, and this little monument is up on the Alps, and it was difficult to see. And then he made a lot of exercise and esercitazioni, more than exercise, thinking and try and modification in this abstract language that he was developing, particularly in the villas. The villas are all an evolution of these ideas, and each of them could be interesting to see. We reconstruct many of them. We had we did a specific syntax in each of them, and here we see the Asilo Santeria, that is probably one of the most beautiful Italian architecture of the century. In two words. Why the Asilo Santeria is so beautiful and so important? Because the Asilo Santeria plays a dialectic again between abstraction and presence of this architecture in a specific relationship with nature. Here, he cannot avoid to speak with nature. And although it was not in the chord of the running, in this case he has to do something in relationship with nature. Why? Because it is a daycare center. So the world of the little boys has to be interpreted in a dialectic that is not the dialectic of the Casa del Fascio with the regime and the all that world is a dialectic that has to do with the little child. So what he does, basically, he study a sequence that is a fantastic sequence. Questa non è dove la pianta. All right, it's a fantastic sequence that goes from the street back there to an atrium that is in the middle, to a courtyard, and then to a frame. And all this sequence can be read the longitudinal and also diagonal, in both directions. And so the whole building in some way vibrates around this issue. Everything it is captured around this central zone, but at the same time it opens on many levels. And also all these things are related to movement and circulation, etc. It's an absolute masterpiece, and then you can have the chance to feel, you will immediately see. Other important buildings, we are approaching the war, and we are in 38. This is the Danteum, the monument for Dante that he did in close to the Colosseum. It was never built, but it was studied with a lot of attention. And I have to mention that this year in Rome, a group of architects and a group of architects and professors and a group of graduating students made a very, very important job. They reconstructed all the projects of Terragni for Rome. And they made a book, an important book. I am, of course, a big supporter of this group. Flavio Mancione and Luca Ribichini are the main one, and there is an exhibition that is traveling, and this just to give you an idea of the level of detail of this building, of the care. I have the book I did not bring with me, but it's a very interesting work and can be object of any other possible future conversation. So Terragni, as I told you, basically finished his activity at the age of 35. In 1939, he was called to the war. He followed the construction of the last architecture, that was the Giuliani Frigeri, which is this building. And this is a picture that for me is very, very important, because I started to work on Terragni in 87, and very soon I realized the way that he was working, and I was very interested to find the place where he was working. So to the one of the nephew, I asked him to really see the place. And was, many artists work in small place during the night with the cat. He was creating these masterpieces and giving the drawing in the morning to the people of the office to do art drawing and going every day to the building site and participate to the culture of Italy. So he's a great figure, and I'm glad to have, and this is only one ingredient of the book. We dedicated some pages to him, but it's only one ingredient of the book, and I'm sure you will enjoy reading it to Architecture and Modernity in Albanese. You finally can read this thing in Albanese. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor, for a great lecture. Now is the time for some questions. One or two questions. A few things again. The Kutulima Sai Asha is a delivery from Hajjul Muntagen and the film of the song in Tamale.
Okay. So let's play the game. Ardita. No, he's not here today. He's not here. We need to the record. And Ermal. Grazie, Ermal. Grazie. Dorina, Antonino,
super bad. Batista, you know, I am very tired during many years. I started, without many other activities, a new book series, and the book series is deals with culture and culture. So it is very trans. So Transcendental Time has this title that is very cheesy and it's a fantastic book. So it's just brand new. Yeah. I already gave to both, of course, to thank you. So the question of the
just one question, and this is the last question, so we go for the book. Why Serrani in contribution to architecture has been recognized very late in Italy and globally? Is it related to the time he performed, or there are more reasons? Why?
I had the great fortune to speak with people of the 30s, and I speak with the wife, Giulia Banfi, is the wife of Antonio Banfi. Antonio Banfi, I'm telling you the story short, but it's very important to understand, there was this Teresucci, Rogers, Banfi e Bergoglioso, the famous group of Italian artists. Okay? They were doing, among other things, the magazine Quadrante in the kitchen. For us, the mythical thing, but she was telling me how Manuel was doing it. And Giulia Banfi, so I have a direct witness, he always talked to me about the fascination that Serrani was making, not only as a man, for her as a young lady, but also really the relevance of architecture. Everybody knows that Serrani was the best. Bruno knows Piacentini, he was not Pagano, he was absolutely known that he was the best. It's not true that he was not known. He was absolutely known. So Serrani was not a discovered, was absolutely known that was the best. There was no problem. As a good football player. The problem is that architecture is not against as a football team. So basically he won, although he had in Como some power because of the brother, because of that, he never was able, although all this effort that he made, to really go up to a level. He was never able to build anything in Rome, although he won competition, he did that until today. That's why the thing is so important, this thing, because they reconstruct all the building materials. So the thing is not that Serrani was not known, the fact that the power structure, in a way, was dominated mainly by Piacentini, mainly. So it was cut off by the main important occasion, although he made the competition for EUR, he made two competitions, others he proposed, but he never built anything. And it's very nice to read the correspondence, and that's what they said. So that is the first. Other people in Italy that had the type of destiny, they were less known, but become much more important later, like PepsiCo. But then what's known, what's published was, and another aspect that is very interesting, though, is why after the war it was a problem with Iran and another person, because in a way it was clearly intervening with the regime. So the type of distance, you know, that you have to create, particularly after those things, I'm sure in many communist countries, these things happen, particularly in Yugoslavia. There are so many great architects that we are discovering now, but they operated in Yugoslavia during the communist time, and they start to reappear now. So something a little bit similar happens. And of course, one thing one has to say about Serrani is also the figure of Bruno Zeri, that is one of my masters, that is very important into that, because he helped a lot in understanding Terani, in reading Terani, in making things of Terani. He was also supposed to write a book on Terani in the 50s that he never did, for one reason or the other. So when this book arrived, I was a little bit, how can I say, I brought it to him as an important homage, and I was always afraid to his judgment. Instead, his judgment was absolutely enthusiastic. I was teaching in Africa, I see the letter there. He published in Espresso, so he was extremely generous on this. And I think that was very important.
Glielo ho portato apposta per lei. Ecco. Grazie, grazie. Ok. Allora, I go to the book signing.
Scusami, ah, ha detto un servizio di 7 ore.